Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Kim Grinnell, Dogman.com with Chris Vetter, Scott Eklund. It's been a busy week at the University of Washington. It's been a busy week at Dogman.com. Just lots and lots going on and just leading up to spring ball. But you just want to go ahead and start off this podcast with just, mentioning and talking a little bit about our good friend David Handy. I've known David for a long time. And for those who don't recognize the name, for those who've been around Dogman for a long time, he was the author who pretty much once a week during football season came out with his column called Meanderings and just pretty much a historical look back at University of Washington football. One of the most gracious men I know, Vietnam vet, worked on a lot of political campaigns, has two children, has a grandson that he absolutely adores, was down in the Bay Area for a long time, moved back to Boston and then back in the Bay Area. And David's been dealing with some health issues for the past 4 or 5 years and battling hard, but it got the better of him recently. And I got a phone call at 6 o'clock in the morning earlier this week to, with the inevitable, everybody that knew David and the family knew what was coming, but we lost David earlier this week. And it's a big loss. They don't make them like that anymore. David was one of those guys that could walk into a room and within an hour, he'd know the name of everybody in there. He was just a dynamic personality. One of the best networking guys I've ever come across. And for those who aren't familiar with him or want to revisit, just go to our message boards, our forums, and look for Hardcore Classics. And we pretty much archived them all there. And you can go back and, you know, a lot of them are still relevant today. So you'll get a good history of Husky football and some really cool stories if you want to go back and look at David's meanderings. And I brought him up last year to the Boise State game and was hoping to get him back for the Oregon game last year, as well as coming up to the Michigan game. But last year the health, just it didn't hold up, and we had dinner at the Metropolitan Grill, which was fantastic. And he'll be sorely missed. I talk to him regularly, about all kinds of different things. But he's a huge Husky football fan and a good friend of Don and Carol James, as well as everybody, in that era of Husky football. He was just a walking encyclopedia, and he will be missed. Chris Vetter's, you met and dealt with Andy as well. He's just one of the best.
Oh, absolutely. No, it's a huge loss for us specifically, but also for just Husky Nation in general and Washington Athletics, because I used to joke with him all the time about the name dropping, because you couldn't come into a conversation with him without, him giving you a big long spiel about someone or something, whatever was topical or relevant that day. He would have something to say about it. So like you said, Kim, an absolute font of knowledge when it came to Washington Athletics. He was as connected as anyone, which really gave the things that he would talk about on our message boards a lot of impact. And that's why he ended up with basically an entire message board all to himself on the Husky Classics, because they were too good to just kind of let go into the scrap heap of what is normally talked about on the message boards, because things come and go. But from what Dave would talk about, and I was going to ask you even off the air, but was he in the process of putting some things together down on paper? I think at one point he was talking about trying to maybe write a book or do something, because he would have been phenomenal. Just the stories that he could tell and the people that he knew That would have been great.
I know he was working on some stuff. I don't know that it ever came to completion, but you know, one of the things, you know, I know his family would tell him not to worry about because he felt a certain obligation and, to get his meanderings column out every week. And sometimes he would stress over that a little bit, but, I told him not to sweat it. I told him numerous times not to sweat it, but he said, it's like working out, Kim. It's cathartic for me. I have so much up there and sometimes I just need to get it out, and it's difficult sometimes, but you know, he kind of equated it to working out. You know, you hate to do it, but you're glad when you're done. And you know, just his ability to get that out of his head, because he had so much in there. It's kind of like emptying a file cabinet is, you know, the way he kind of described it. So he'll be missed.
I was going to say, Kim, the other thing that's important to know about Dave and just that type of thing as well is that, you know, he got a lot of things down on paper. People can go back to the classics board and read a lot of his posts that are relevant to whatever week, whatever game was going on at that time. But there's also just kind of, I think, the thing that's being lost in our society today in terms of an oral history, right? In terms of just stories and anecdotes and little things that get passed on from generation to generation about what had happened during a certain time in the James era, or what happened in a certain time, you know, in the Harshman era or in Romar's era. They're just, he was fantastic about telling these stories, because he gave it, when he would do it in person, there was a certain flavor. There was a certain way of speaking that he would have. You could just feel his energy. It's just the vibe was so great when he was talking about the stuff that he loved.
One of my favorite conversations ever with Dave, and you're going to think this is just funny, I'll just never forget. It was so funny. And I was laughing the whole time. I was trying to explain to him when he was writing how to cut and paste.
Yeah, there you go.
Chris, you can imagine that conversation.
He was looking for his scissors.
Well, let me show you how to do this. You just copy everything and put it up on your clipboard. Like I said, it was comical. Absolutely comical. But
you need to go out and buy a clipboard, go out and buy like a bulletin board or something. The thing, it's like you bring the new generations into it and there's that crossover. But really, like I said, when it comes to oral histories and when it comes to stories, you know, within families or between families, you know, these things get passed down through the generations, and Dave had so many good stories to tell. And like I said, if people go over to the classics board and read a lot of the things that he had to say, and you'll vouch for this too, Kim, it wasn't just about Husky football or basketball or even Husky athletics in general. You know, 90% of it was, but that other 10%, man alive, he had some amazing things to say about a lot of other topics too.
David Handy, you will be missed. I'm sure you're up there listening to this. I'm sure you're trying to figure out how to put your AirPods and work with your iPad and iPhone. And, you know, you will be missed. So I'll be heading down to San Francisco, catching up with his family at some point, and we'll get more information out there as it comes out. So just David Handy, you will be missed. Busy week, busy, busy, busy week. Just lots going on. We had a press conference yesterday with the new athletic director at the University of Washington, with Pat Chun being introduced. And boy, the vitriol coming from Cougar Nation. I understand, but man, it's just been bad. You know, I know they lost their coach, they lost their conference, and losing their athletic director, it's just been, you know, I don't know if it's called whack-a-mole. It's a lot more like pummel-a-mole. And Scott, you've seen some of that vitriol out there. Oh, my. They're pissed.
Yeah, I think Husky fans would be pretty pissed off if they were in the same situation. So I don't think, especially losing it to your cross-state rival, you know, I can totally understand their vitriol and everything like that. And it's just the world we live in right now. And you know, Washington did what was best for them. They did what was best for them going to the Big Ten. They did what's best for, you know, what they thought that was best for their student athletes and their coaches and everything like that. I mean, let's be honest with you. Annemarie Casse could have gotten many different ways with this. She got somebody who actually cares about sports, who doesn't care about all the other stuff that goes along with it. He can play the political game, but he doesn't get involved with all that other stuff that can come with being an athletic director. And he's more focused on making this a good situation for the athletes as well as the coaching staff and being a representative for the university. You know, will he be here for a long time? Who knows? We don't know. You know, Ohio State, the place that he had kind of coveted as an AD job, just hired somebody. So that person's going to get at least, you know, a handful of years to do what they need to do over at Ohio State. So, I think Washington's in a pretty good spot to have Chun around for 5, maybe 10 years before he looks to leave. And maybe he doesn't, maybe he just decides to stay here. The other great thing about Chun is that he's been in this region. He understands the culture up here. I don't mean politically. I just mean the culture, how people want to be treated, what kind of involvement donors want to have in their in their university and in the programs that they love and everything like that. So I think he's going to do a really good job here at the University of Washington. I think it's the best hire that could have been made in the short time it had to be made. And I think Washington just needs to move forward and not really worry about what Washington State's thinking.
Yeah, and, you know, I talked to Jen Cohen about this a while back before they hired Troy Dan, and she said the problem with hiring an athletic director is the talent pool is not very big. When you stop and think about it, if you're looking for a head coach or an assistant coach, I mean, it's just limitless how many candidates are out there. How many qualified candidates are there to be an athletic director? And then you think you're hiring the right qualifications, and I keep on saying it, every 6 weeks we enter into a new world. Because what that job as an athletic director is today wasn't the same a couple months ago, and it's not going to be the same in a few months. There's a lot of things going to be happening over the next couple of years, and you know, hiring a guy who's been through the landscape with the former Pac-12 and dealing with, you know, the merger of the Big Ten, and you know, is very, very, very familiar with the University of Washington. I don't think there was it was a no-brainer. It was the only hire that they could have made that really made sense. And then, you know, Patrick Chun, I know that, you know, like Ian Furness, Jason Puckett, Jim Moore are pretty bitter about things and coming out and talking about how the most successful coaches at Washington State with Kyle Smith and Mike Leach, there wasn't the best relationship there, you know, and I'm thinking, okay, well, who had a good relationship with Mike Leach? And then with Kyle Smith, I got to imagine that that's a tough situation over there where you need resources that just aren't available. And I just wonder how much that has to do with it. But you know, I know Washington State fans are pretty bitter about the entire situation, but the one thing he's been able to do over at Washington State and is anticipating he's going to be able to do over here, he's known as an exceptional fundraiser, Chris. I mean, just exceptional fundraiser.
He tripled their fundraising efforts the previous 5 years. I mean, I put it on the boards. I'm like, don't tell me, show me. And Pat Chun showed everyone there. So, you know, the one thing is that Scott's right. I mean, Washington State fans should be pissed. I mean, that you don't ever want to see a guy go from Washington State to Washington, even though it's happened with, you know, Marv Harshman, Dick Baird, Bob Gregory, now Pat Chun. I mean, it happens. Guys go. Guys will come from the east to the west. I mean, it happens. That said, it's the justifications from the people that you hear about, like you mentioned, you know, Jim Moore and Ian Furness, the justifications for why, you know, because I get the rivalry and I get that they don't want to have their top guys going from Washington State to Washington. That's an opinion that's extremely well held. It makes total sense. And that's where it really needs to end. But the stuff that they're inferring or hinting at behind the scenes, just it makes it sound petty. It really does. Because ultimately what Pat Chun did is that he not only tripled their fundraising, he hired for instance, we talk about the non-revenue sports because everyone wants to focus on football and men's basketball, but women's basketball at Washington State, Cami Etheridge, Pat Chun hired her. She happened to bring the only Pac-12 women's championship ever for Washington State athletics. He got out of his own way after the Rolovich thing to go ahead and make sure that they did a hire from within that made sense. And that's worked out just fine with Dickert. And so it feels to me, and then he hired Kyle Smith. No one's going to argue that Kyle Smith was a poor hire, especially now where he's at Stanford. So don't tell me what's going on at Washington State. I can see what's going on at Washington State. Show me what's going on. And everything that Pat Chun can show me about what he had to do on and off the field, their APR is higher than it's ever been in the school's history as far as academics. They brought championships to Pullman. All the stuff that I'm hearing from the top guys at Washington State, whether it's a Furness or a Jim Moore or whoever, it just rings hollow to me because it does really just come off as sour grapes. And I get the vitriol. I get being pissed off about it on a basic level as a fan, but don't justify it because it just doesn't come off very well.
Well, you know, come on, Chris. I mean, when Kalen DeBoer left for Alabama, you just could have substituted the names. I mean, it was just Husky fans were pretty pissed off as well.
100%. 100%. I get all that, Kim. But it's like when they now all of a sudden they try to use some try to evidence themselves into justifying a position. That's where it gets really kind of dull.
But there's no way in hell I'm going to dance on that grave. And if they want to be pissed off, they deserve to be pissed off. If you've been through what they've been through and, you know, basically without a conference, losing their most successful basketball coach and now their athletic director, I mean, they've got to be looking up and going, what's next?
100%. You know, so, 100%. I will add two things about Chun, though, that I think are interesting. Kim, you mentioned Jen Cohen and kind of the influence there. I think she not only had influence on Pat Chun taking this job, I think she had influence on Anna Marie Kause offering the job. Because Pat Chun, one of the things he talked about right off the bat was that this job, this thing would not have been done if it hadn't gotten taken care of so quickly.
Chris, come on. We know the drill. Jen's still running things up here.
Well, I don't know if I go that far, but her influence on Montlake is still extremely strong. I mean, it's there and it's noticeable.
And if anybody who thinks that she doesn't still have influence, that passion for Jen Cohen that she has for the University of Washington, that didn't end. I mean, she's, even though she's down there, she understands that a strong Washington is good for USC going into the Big Ten. She wants University of Washington to be dynamic. She wants them to be successful. And I'm pretty confident that anybody at the University of Washington could reach out to somebody like Jen Cohen, ask her opinion, ask for her help, and she's right there. And that's not denigrating USC at all. She gets it, you know. So, and she's very, very close with Pat Chun. They spent Thanksgivings together. So. Yeah.
The other thing I'd add real quick before we move on, I think if Ohio State had been in a different position with their athletic director stuff, because Gene Smith is one of his mentors, he's retiring. I think they got the guy from A&M, Texas.
Correct.
A&M, I think Bjork, if I remember right.
Correct.
If that job had not been open and Pat Chun hadn't been a serious candidate to become Ohio State's next athletic director 6 months ago, I think he would have come to Washington. I think that 6 months. So this whole thing about, oh, Washington State, blah, 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 you know, I think this could have very easily happened 6 months ago. That's my opinion because it's hypothetical. But I think if the stars had aligned in a different way before Troy Dannon was hired, I think ideally Pat Chun was a better fit for Washington than what Troy Dannon ended up being.
And you could also say that if the stars had aligned, Jonathan Smith would be the head coach at the University 100%. Of Washington. I mean,
100%.
It's so weird to think how things could have changed if things had just started to materialize a little bit earlier. It's kind of funny and also kind of a twilight zone when you think about it.
Well, think about the UCLA football job, too. If Chip Kelly had left earlier, Jonathan Smith could have had his pick. Because he could have gone home, because that's where he's from, SoCal, or he could have stayed in the Northwest and been Washington's coach. He could have had anything he'd wanted and stayed out West. But, you know, you got to strike while the iron's hot.
Remember the good old days when we just do a story a day, every other day, and just ran the message boards and everything was just kind of calm and we just did things at our own pace. Remember those days, Chris?
Oh, my gosh.
What are you talking about? You're out playing golf. Don't give me this.
I'm talking 20 years ago, 15 years ago.
Yeah. 20 years ago, you weren't playing golf.
No.
You were selling houses.
God.
You're off time.
You're much, trust me, Kim, you're much better off now than you were 20 years ago.
Oh, God. Oh, man. It's kind of like, you know, and for all you parents out there, when you've got kids and by the time they're grown and doing great on their own, you just look back and go, I don't know how I did it. I don't know how I did it. So, but I did. But, you know, that's a whole different story. Scott, you got a ways to go, and you're going to look back and go, man, I don't know how I did it. Especially
you say you look back. I look back last weekend and go, how the hell did I do that? I don't get it.
I know.
Hey, real quick, guys, since I was the main guy doing the Chun press conference and had my thoughts, did you guys get a chance to watch the video? I know you guys were doing pro day, but did you get a chance to go after and watch the video and kind of at least generate some initial thoughts on Chun and his speaking and kind of what he was talking about?
Didn't get a chance to watch the video. And to be honest with you, I've interacted with Pat Chun. You know, I've been at plenty of events he's been at plenty of basketball and football tournaments he's been at. You know, and the one thing is he's one of those guys where he doesn't know me that well, but every time he sees me, he walks up, extends his hands. Hi, Kim. How are you? How are things at Dogman? He doesn't know me that well, but he does that. So that's an indication right there that he's able to go in a room kind of like Andy. You know, he'll know everybody in the room. But by the way, can you imagine what a great fundraiser Dave Handy would have been for the University of Washington?
Oh, yeah. That would be fantastic. Hey, yeah.
But Scott, I've known Pat for a while, not personally, but no, he's really easy to talk to.
And Scott, did you get a chance to talk to him at all?
Or I was hoping you wouldn't come to me. No, I did not. That's fine. My wife is out of town and I've got kids running around. And by the time I settled down last night, I had other stuff I had to write. So no, I did not get a
chance. Well, that's okay. Cause you're living the exact same life I'm sure Pat Chun is dealing with the university right now.
Yeah.
Trying to herd cats.
Yeah.
But I will real quick, Kim, before we move on to the next subject, I did want to at least let people know we've got a copy of his memorandum of understanding as far as his contract. He's going to get $1.3 million per year, and it's going to go up $100,000 every year. It's a 5-year deal or 6-year deal, excuse me. So it goes all the way through June 30th of 2030. And if that sixth year comes to fruition, he would get $1.7 million. So it's about a 30% raise from what Dannon was making off the top. He's got some incentives that go up to $225,000 a year if he reaches all of his goals. He gets a $250,000 relocation payment, which, as we found out, that's something that Troy Dannon had to repay the University of Washington. So, and then also just some standard benefits and things like that. $1.5 million buyout, which is the exact same that it was for Troy Dannon.
Pro day yesterday, Scott. It was busy yesterday. The big we've been doing pro day for a long time. It was easily, I would say, triple the amount of people that were inside the building, at least triple, 3 times the amount of people than we've ever seen at the University of Washington. Every NFL team was represented there. There was a lot of family, a lot of media, a lot of national media. NFL football, you know, was there. It was a busy day, Scott.
Yeah, absolutely busy. And I said it was the largest group I had ever seen at the University of Washington. I don't know about triple, but definitely double what I've seen before. Every NFL team was represented by multiple scouts, personnel people, assistant coaches, head coaches. The two head coaches I saw there were Mike McDonald and Sean McVay. But I didn't notice if there were any other ones. But those were the two that I saw. Field Yates was there from ESPN. You and I, Kim, got a chance, and Chris, you even got a chance to talk to him for a few minutes after they were doing stand-ups. Just really nice guy, and was really excited. He's been just blowing up Washington, saying how just unbelievable he thought it was. He was here for 36 hours and said it was a great trip on Twitter. So. You know, got a chance to talk to several of the agents of the players, got a chance. I mean, honestly, you know, it's funny. People all want updates and I totally get it. You guys want updates of what's going on the field. You don't understand. We don't have other than the, verticals, we don't have the ability really to see much of what's going on. You can a little bit with the 40-yard times, but you don't get the exact times. You know, some people were putting out the 4.46 number, but you know, the more accurate times, which were the ones who were doing the stopwatches, not iPhones, but stopwatches on the sidelines, said about 4.55, still really good for Michael Penix. But we just don't have the ability to see very much what's going on because of the way the field is set up. And so really, this is about talking to people on the sidelines, talking to parents, talking to other prospects, you know, NFL prospects, talking to guys who are in the NFL. There were Joel DeBlanco. I don't know if people remember him, but linebacker out of Aberdeen who went over to Cincinnati and had an all-star career, and he's looking at getting into the CFL. It was good catching up with him. We got to meet some of the new staff members. I mean, I talked to John Richardson for a while. I talked to Armon Hawkins for a little while. Matt Doherty, the recruiting guy. I mean, we just talked to all these guys, and these are all people we hadn't really even met before. So there was just a lot of stuff to take in. I mean, if you have ADD, Kim was in, so you guys know, Kim was in his element yesterday.
I was dialed in.
You just could bounce from one thing to another, and it was really great. I just loved talking to Dominique Hampton when we were talking about the turf that he played on this year, the several different places, and that he played on. Chris and I got a chance to talk to Thule afterwards. He's a guy who hasn't done a lot of interviews, and we got a chance to talk to him. That's all up on the audio, right, Chris, that you put up last night. So,
yes.
So, I mean, just a lot of stuff that we were able to get. We just weren't able to do as many updates on the field because we just can't see that much going on.
So. Yeah, just real quick, everybody was wondering if Ryan Grubb was there. He wasn't.
Neither was Scott Huff. I was surprised about both of those.
I was talking to Rome. Have you talked to Scott Huff? Yeah, he called me this morning. He's in Hawaii. Scott doesn't need to be there.
All of us want to be.
Scott doesn't need to be there. He knows what those guys are. So it was kind of funny. Yeah, it's just we didn't see Scott. I was hoping to see Scott Huff there. I was hoping to see Ryan, and neither one of them are there. And
just go over to Dino's, Kim.
Yeah, they're always there.
My pet theory is that they wanted other eyes to go look at those guys from the Seahawks, guys that maybe hadn't seen them much before, because when it comes down to it, no one has seen those guys more than Scott Huff and Ryan Grubb. They don't need to see those guys anymore. They know exactly what they are.
Well, we were kind of commenting. There was a couple of us talking about when Michael Penix ran. Everybody around me had Michael in 4.4s, right? Yeah. And then those NFL guys, there's no official times. Everybody's got their own stopwatch. Everybody's doing their own timing, right? And so everybody, I mean, I'm next to Jack, and I got like seven or eight people, and we all had Michael in the 4.4s, right? And then talking to Field Yates, he says, yeah, I'm out there. And all the NFL guys, yeah, 4.56, 4.6. I just go, okay, is there a little bit of fibbing going on out there? Is there a little bit of gamesmanship going out there? Because everybody I had, Michael in the 4.4s. He was flying. We also asked him, he only ran once, and I thought he let up a little bit at the end, by the way, but he said he didn't go for a second one. He says, I just want to show that I can run, and I proved that.
Yeah, and this is an eye test thing for me. Everyone's going to have their own watch. Everyone's going to have their own subjective time because it wasn't electronically timed. You couldn't dial it down to a tenth or a hundredth. But what I will say is anybody who watched the film or the recordings of him running a 40, Kim, man, he was moving. And it was smooth. There was no chop in his step. There was no hitch. He didn't look like a guy that was dealing with injuries, because injuries are 2 years down the road for him. So as far as I'm concerned, yeah, he proved without a shadow of a doubt, running is not a problem for Michael Penix Jr.
Chris, he was showing off. He took his shirt off. He's ripped, and he pulled a 4.4, 4.5. He was just kind of showing off a little bit. Yeah, you know, I can do it.
What was really cool was I was able to get a picture, and I put it up on my Twitter account, but of him and Warren Moon talking. Yeah. And that was pretty cool. I mean, you could consider those two guys as possible. I don't think anybody would argue that Warren Moon belongs probably on the, you know, Mount Rushmore of Husky quarterbacks. And I think Michael Penix, with the last 2 years, I think he's put himself right in that mix too.
I think Michael Penix was the story of the day yesterday. I think he stole the show with a 36 and a half inch vert. I don't know if he jumped or not, but he did a broad jump,
10.5.
Yeah, I mean, he showed his athleticism, and he showed all the off the field stuff, and he took his shirt off, and he's ripped, and man, he was throwing deep balls. He was throwing deep balls, and it's wild to see. I mean, it's like Ken Griffey Jr.'s swing, watching Michael Penix throw a football. It was just beautiful out there.
Yeah, it's what's a little disappointing, guys, and again, this, I think either you can take this as sour grapes or parsing things. But it's so weird, the national narrative now coming out, like on ESPN, NFL Network, and things like that. The guys that see him in person, They're like, yeah, you watch the tape, things like that. He looks fantastic. But when you see him in person, the ball just comes out different. And all these things and this and that and the way he ran and this, he solidified his spot as a first-round guy. I'm just sitting here going, yeah, I mean, I've been up close and personal seeing it the last 2 years. But it's like, even on tape, it's like he didn't show anything that he hasn't already shown on tape. If you want to see how he can run, if he, even on design runs and things like that, go look at the Sugar Bowl game. He had a few of those third down runs that were fantastic. I mean, there's no problem running with Michael Penix Jr. if you really paid attention. So I just think it's funny that the narrative can change so quickly just because he decided to take a shirt off and go run a 40. Now all of a sudden he's solidified as a first round pick. I think this goes back to what you were saying, Kim. I think there's a lot of gamesmanship going on, frankly.
It kind of reminds me of back in the day when my son, Chris, is my oldest. He was like 12 years old. Dad, I found this really new cool band. Have you ever heard of Led Zeppelin? Yeah. I mean, hey, Chris, have you ever heard of Michael Penix? Yeah. I mean, it's almost like that with some of these guys, you know. It's just that they've never seen him play. They've heard him. They've seen the, he got Heisman votes, but they've never really seen him play because there's so many of them on the East Coast. And, you know, Scott, we've talked about this. You take a look at the Heisman voters and where they're at, and what, 80% of them are, you know, east of the Mississippi?
Yeah, but I mean, they could have seen him play the three games that he's played against Oregon, you know, arguably the top program in the conference the past decade, you know, and beating them all three times that he played them. I mean, there's no reason for them to be surprised by what Michael Penix can do. It's shocking to hear people say that they had never really seen him that much or anything like that. It's like, what have you been doing? Okay, this guy has been doing it for 2 years at the University of Washington. He did it for a team bereft of talent compared to who they were facing on a yearly basis in the Big Ten at Indiana. So it's frustrating.
Chris, you had a chance to talk to Dylan Johnson. I did not. Anything from Dylan?
No, I just think that he really underscored just how much he was going through at the end of the season. Basically was running one-legged, you know, the whole time, those last 5-6 games. You know, just gutting it out in that Sugar Bowl at the very end when everyone saw him get taken off and clearly running at about 25-30% at the national championship game. Basically confirmed that he was hurt the whole time.
Yep.
And even on top of it, I asked him, I said, so were you 100% today? And he just laughed at me and looked at me and he goes, no way. He goes, if I'm 70%, I'm lucky. He goes, so, you know, we asked him, you know, how has that affected the conversations that he's had with teams that are interested in him? And he's like, they understand. They totally understand. But I just want them to know that there was nothing that was going to get in the way of me trying to do everything I could to help this team this year. I was going to gut it out. I was going to tough it out, whatever I needed to do. It was like Zion Tupuola-Fatui. I talked to Zion for a while yesterday as well, and he didn't work out at all because he's still rehabbing the shoulder that he got done right after the national championship game. A lot of people don't realize he hurt his shoulder in spring football, and yet he was not going to allow himself to get taken out of these games. It was just like a pain tolerance threshold thing for him. He played the entire season basically hurt. And that's why he wasn't as effective as people would have expected him to be alongside Braylon Trice. So there were so many things with the injury front with guys just trying to gut it through. But Dylan Johnson, yeah, he was an absolute Iron Man at the end of that season.
Yeah, a couple of other guys I had a chance to talk to, just a couple things that stood out. Devin Culp, he weighed in at 239. He said he pretty much played the entire season right around 240. He said that one of the things is the pro scouts probably want to see him put on an additional 10 pounds. So something to keep an eye on with that. Talking to Jack Westover, he had the surgery here not too long ago. He looked fantastic out, you know, catching balls. So keep an eye on the Seahawks because I know that Ryan Grubb absolutely loves him some Jack Westover. So it was good to see Jack, and it's always funny. I don't know if you've been around Jack and his little brother, oh my God, he is just that little brother who's just gonna poke you until you hit him in the mouth. And it's funny to see that interaction between those two kids. So I had a chance to do that. Romu Udunze, he didn't work out. He didn't feel he really needed to. He was there to just kind of hang, Rome doing his thing, and said, sounds like the New York Giants have a lot of interest in him. also talked to, I don't know if you guys remember this or not, but we asked him during the season about his NIL money, and he said he never spent any of it. He said he invested it all. So he talked a little bit about that. Listen to the podcast about what he's doing with his money.
And a kid wise beyond his years. Yes, I'll tell you that right now.
Yes, as he's been pretty conservative, but he's got to get a little bit more aggressive on that. Just need that return for my retirement. So it was kind of funny. And I don't, Scott, I don't know if you had a chance to listen to that, but you know, Jalen McMillan was asking him questions and throwing stuff at him. So
I didn't hear that.
My favorite part of yesterday, Scott talked about Thule. And at the very end, because, you know, he hadn't been a part of the combine process in Indianapolis because he didn't get invited. So he talked a little bit about having a chip on his shoulder and whatnot. I said, but have you still talked to any guys and gotten any really off the wall questions and stuff? And he goes, no, it's actually been pretty good. I said, so you didn't get anything about could you fly a plane or anything like that? And he goes, no, man, I'm just like Rome. That plane's going down.
Yeah, no, it's I had him at a 5-1 yesterday, by the way.
Yeah, he said it was a 515 or something like that was what he did. But
and he said 290. He was at 295.
Was the least that he's weighed since he got in here to the University of Washington. So the other one, I mean, I talked to Braylon Trice, and I mean he basically was sick as a dog at the combine and lost 15 pounds. He wanted to be 255. When he showed up, he was less than 245 when he showed up for his weigh-in at the combine. And he said, I was sick the whole time. And but I also wanted to get out there and compete and show what I could do. And so, you know, he gets out there. And so then he shows up at the University of Washington's pro day and he's 259 and looked much better. I don't know if you guys saw him in his positional workout, but I thought he looked much better, much smoother. Much more like the guy that we were used to seeing than what we saw at the combine.
Yeah. Roger Rosengarten talked to him a little bit. The mock draft saw him going in the first round of the 49ers. He's 6'6", 310, looks fantastic. So, you know, just all these interviews are out on dogman.com. So, you know, just go ahead and take a listen. A lot of good stuff. By the way, I had Dominic Hampton, and so did a bunch of us. I had him at a 4.36, and I look over at Jack, and Jack had him at a 4.35, and I'm just going, holy crap. But, Scott, you covered him when he was being recruiting. He was a track guy in high school.
He was, but he was a football player who could run track. He wasn't the opposite. So, yeah. And, you know, with his move to safety, it always seemed like a natural thing. I didn't think he was terrible in coverage, but I just thought his – hips and the way he moved and the way he liked to be physical. I thought he was a much better fit at safety. And I think we saw that over the last 2 years, his ability to play safety was a little bit better than his ability to play corner. And the fact that he can be a cover safety for you just adds to his abilities. So what I'm going to really look for when we get to the NFL draft is where he winds up being selected. He will be drafted. I'll be shocked if a guy his size with his athleticism isn't drafted. But I'll be interested to see where he's drafted because I want to see what kind of a defense he'll be able to play in as a safety, because I just don't think he's a corner, but I'm not quite sure he's that free safety. He's a guy who has to play a little bit closer to the the line of scrimmage and talk to him for a little bit. He's just a big dude. I mean, it is crazy how big he is.
What's funny is we had a comparison. You know, I said, who do you think you're, you know, close to? Who are they comparing you to? So he did 1, 2, 3, and we both blurted out a name on who we thought his NFL comparison was. I was kind of surprised who he said people were comparing him to, because he said people were comparing him to Cam Chancellor.
And well, I would have said.
Yeah, and I was comparing him to Jamal Adams.
He's bigger than Jamal Adams. Well, I mean, he's taller. I mean, for starters.
Yeah. Let's put it this way. He's better in coverage.
Yeah.
Hey, before we put a wrap on the pro day talk, guys. Hey, Kim, do you have your phone with you?
Yeah.
Check your steps. I'd be curious. How many steps you put in yesterday?
Oh, God. I'd have to go back and look. A lot.
I didn't walk around as much as Kim, but I was almost at 15,000. I'm usually in the 10 to 12,000 range. So I
literally I turned around half a dozen times because I thought you were right there and you were literally like 100 yards down the road.
Yeah, good luck on that. Yeah, you're not going to sit. I don't sit still very well. So my assistant back in the day used to threaten she was going to put a seatbelt on my chair. So, one other thing, I had a chance to talk to Coach Pete briefly yesterday.
Oh, that was fun.
Oh, God. You know, because I remember having a conversation with him one time. I asked him, do you play golf? And he looked at me like he had four eyeballs, you know, and when would I have time to play golf? And now he's playing golf and he's in the media and he was talking about doing the media and having the thing in his ear. And that was pretty funny talking to Coach P with a big smile on his face. And you got to admit, you guys, he looks good. He looks happy.
He's happy. And I told him, I said, Coach, you know, people are always asking if you'd be the athletic director at the University of Washington. And he just, you could see his face go, are you kidding? And I said, it's the easiest answer that we give. No, it will never happen. I want you guys to believe this. It will never happen. They could throw $1 billion at Chris Peterson. He would never take the athletic director job.
Literally, they could.
Or at any school, not just Washington, any school.
Well, he might do Cal Davis.
No, it's not happening. He's like, one of the things he said to us was, I had a tough time controlling 120 guys. Imagine, and you know, 10 assistants and goes, now I've got to control how many sports they have at Washington. What is it, like 15 or 20 something like that? He's like, so I've got to have head coaches, players, assistants, support staff, all that under my purview. And I'm responsible for all that? No, I'm not doing.
He's got his house on the lake. He's got his boat. He's got his country club membership, and he does what he wants. It was a pretty funny conversation, but.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the Chi?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down!
A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes May 10th. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.
God, what day was it? 2 days ago. Football press conference with Brendan Carroll, Jed Fish, and... boy, you know, we talk about guys who are long-winded and word wasters. That is not Steve Belichick.
If I closed my eyes, Kim, and didn't know that it was Steve Belichick talking, I would have sworn it was Bill Belichick.
Here, ask me a question, and I'll answer it like Steve. Answer me a question. Ask me a question.
So, Steve, just tell us, what do you think of being up here at the University of Washington?
It's good.
Yeah. I mean, it's good. I mean, he wasn't terrible, but it was, I mean, he actually, the funny thing about people like him and his dad is that, they're so dry that their sense of humor is super dry.
Well, how about when somebody asked him the difference between him and his dad?
Yeah.
I have a job. Bill doesn't.
Yeah. I know.
It was. He had his hair up in a man bun.
Yeah, he's a different dude.
Somebody asked him, "So you're gonna focus on just one position, or are you gonna walk around?" Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm gonna do.
Basically,
yet.
I asked him. I said, "You know, what is it gonna be like for you floating around and not really having a position to coach, but just kind of do you have a plan in mind, or how are you gonna approach that?" And he goes, "Well, I'll just kind of see how it goes, and you know, I might one place for a while, or I might do this, and we'll see how it goes."
Oh, and then the big one is we've had the schedule for about a week for spring practice.
Oh yeah.
We're supposed to start on Tuesday. So we all make plans and we're doing our calendars and stuff. And then Jed Fish goes, "Yeah, we'll start practice Tuesday or Wednesday. Not sure. We'll let you guys know." And everybody in the room starts looking around like, and even the sports information director, "Okay, the first I've heard of this."
Yeah. So it sounds like there's a personal thing going on that might need to be taken care of. So we'll know a little bit more down closer. But it's like I set up my kids' soccer practices for Mondays and Wednesdays.
More importantly, these are open to the public.
Yeah.
The public usually would like to know more than 12 hours in advance if they can go to practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we didn't get a whole lot out of the press conference, to be honest with you. There wasn't just a whole lot that came out of it.
No. I honestly, the thing is, I was kind of mad at us. As a press corps, we didn't ask about any guys being out because I saw several guys who look like they're not going to be fully able to participate in camp or even be part of it yesterday because they were in a walking boot or whatever. So, but we're not allowed to really discuss that. So, you know, there's going to be some guys who aren't going to participate this spring. You know, I talked to them and they said, oh, I'll be fine for fall camp and I might even be able to take part at the end of spring ball, but right now I'm just focused on getting better, you know, and things like that. So
yeah, just again, we'll start practice on Tuesday, hopefully Tuesday, but just FYI, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturdays. Tuesdays look like they're going to be 3:30. Saturdays look like they're going to be at about 11:30. So yeah. We'll be at every practice. We'll have interviews. We'll cover practice. So just make sure you keep it right here at dogman.com and we'll cover all of that. Another press conference we had the other day with introducing the new head coach for the University of Washington basketball and Danny Sprinkle. And, you know, right before we started this podcast, Will Conroy put out that he will not be coaching at the University of Washington.
Yeah, it's it's kind of the end of an era. I kind of forgot that, you know, it's been almost 10 years since Will was hired on with Coach Romar. So it's going to be really, really, really weird not seeing Will on the sidelines when Washington plays their first game, I would imagine this coming November. Yeah. So that's going to be extremely odd because he's always been a constant. And then the last few years, you know, Quincy's been in there as well. Kim, are we assuming that Jerry Hobby is going to stick around? I mean, what are we hearing?
Yeah, I'm anticipating Jerry Hobby being retained, probably not as a so-called coach, but something like the director of basketball operations. So anticipate that happening. And then Andy Hill, his assistant, who was at Utah for a long time, Andy Hill will be coming with him. Also hearing Tony Bland, and you guys can Google Tony Bland coming with him. But other than that, haven't heard any other staff.
So, Kim, I just wanted to make sure, though, it sounds like Andy Hill is also part of the coaching search at Utah State still. So it sounds like they may go in a different direction than him, but it sounds like he's kind of in the middle of both programs right now.
Yeah, it sounds like he's also a candidate down at Long Beach State, if I'm not mistaken. Dan Monson, of course, got fired right before the tournament, and then they win the conference and go to the tournament. But Dan Monson fired, and I guess he's a candidate for that. So, Hobby's going to stay, probably something in the front office, and that'll kind of be tied to the NIL situation. So we can talk about that at a later date or discuss it on the message boards. But we'll see who he fills in with. But Chris, I mean, we've been to a lot of press conferences. This one was different. I mean, he knows the football team. He was taking time out. He was watching the football games. He knows the guys. And his dad played at the University of Washington and had a chance to talk to him, by the way. And, you know, for you old timers, you know, Bill Sprinkle back in the day, I was talking to him. He was a Purple Helmet guy, you know, so it was kind of funny talking to a guy that a lot of people don't remember that. But I mean, you're a Purple Helmet guy. It means you're a pretty good player.
Yeah, and for me, the funniest moment was how fired up he got because his parents were there. I mean, his mom and dad were right there in the front row, and his sister was there as well. And obviously, it was really, really well attended. A lot of current and former players in the back, a lot of donors and what have you, a lot of staff people there too. But, man, he couldn't put a finer point about the fact that he was born in Pullman, but that's the beginning and end of it. He had nothing to do with it. He's like, he wanted to disavow it. He said his dad's still pissed off that it had to happen that way. But they didn't have a hospital in Moscow.
Yeah, they lived in Moscow, but the only reason it was Pullman is because they didn't have a hospital in Moscow.
Yeah, he got fired up about that. You won't have to worry about going to Pullman, Danny. You came at the right time, so you don't have to worry about any of that.
Yeah, pretty fired up. Raekwon Battle was there, and Raekwon was here, of course. And then, my talking with Mike Hopkins. Mike Hopkins really helped Raekwon get settled in at Montana State. And if you saw the tweet that Raekwon put out there about Coach Sprinkle thinks the world of him. And, you know, I asked Raekwon about, you know, Danny had talked to something about basketball practice resembling football practice. And, you know, and Raekwon goes, yeah, there's practices where elbow pads and knee pads are mandatory. He says, you know, I hurt my elbow and it still hurts to this day. We had some pretty physical basketball practices. And Sprinkle talked about that after the San Diego State game for the conference title that they didn't win, how they got manhandled. And he talked about they had a practice the day before the game that you wouldn't typically have the day before a tournament game.
Yeah, it sounds like there's definitely some old school elements to the way he likes to approach things. The two guys he mentioned as kind of mentors and role models, Bobby Braswell and Dedrick Taylor, which are both, you know, they're both coaching down in SoCal. And I think Braswell is the one that hired him on as an assistant. I don't remember if it was at Northridge or one of the Cal State schools, but it sounds like he's got some of those old school elements about him, definitely. And, you know, you go on the message boards and some of the people that have talked to others that know Sprinkle and his, you know, kind of what his reputation is as far as the coaching ranks. And the one comp that you hear kind of consistently in terms of that kind of old school, new school blend is Tom Izzo. And I was like, well, if Washington just got their version of Tom Izzo, that would be, I think that would work out okay for them.
It's going to be interesting to see just what happens in the transfer portal. Corin Johnson, of course, is in the transfer portal and a lot of schools after him. Not sure what's going to happen to Big Frank. I saw Braxton Mia, who had surgery on his thumb, and also saw Wesley Yates, who seems happy here. I'm not sure what's going on with Zoom Diallo. So a lot of follow-up to be done on those things over the weekend. So we'll see who is filled in with the coaching staff as well as the roster. Transfer portal is currently open for basketball. I believe it goes until May 1st, where football, I believe it opens April 15th and closes either
30th.
The 30th? Yeah. So
basically 2 weeks.
Yeah. So we're still going to be busy, guys. So,
Again, I talked about this on an earlier podcast, but I really do feel like the timing of the way the portal is set up for football in that span from the 15th to the 30th could really pay dividends for Washington, because you're going to have a lot of guys that are going to want to come to Washington and see what the new staff is all about. They're going to get a chance to watch practices. They're going to get a chance to see what's going on in the locker room before practice, after practice. They're going to get to hang with the players, and they're going to get a really good sense of what a day in the life of a Washington football player is like, in a way that maybe a lot of other places are either done with football or are just literally finishing up their spring ball. So I think the late timing of spring football this particular year is something that could really help Wash.
Scott, there was a commitment this week, but with everything going on, it kind of got lost in the shuffle. Give us an update on the commitment as well as maybe give us a rundown on recruiting. What's going on?
Julian McMahon, running back out of Monta Vista High School. Same high school as Jake Hayner, Corey Luciano, Peyton Henry. So that's a place that's helped Washington a lot over the last couple of years. You know, it just really, you know, good running back. What was, what was interesting was I don't think there was really any buzz that this kid was going to make his decision. And I think it might have caught some people off guard, caught me off guard. You know, I had just talked to him a couple days earlier and said, hey, how's things looking? And he said, yeah, he goes, I'm getting closer to a decision, but I want to take my visits and everything like that. And then all of a sudden it pops as I'm driving home from dropping my kids off at school. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? So, you know, the kid's just really excited. I think he also knows that Washington's in on some other big time guys and he wanted to get his spot. And really good running back, 6'2", 190, 6'1", 190, probably, you know, he's listed at 6'2". He's probably more like 6 foot, 6'1". But whatever it is, he's got a great frame. He can play it easily, 215, 220 pounds, not lose any of his speed. He's got underrated speed, not elite top-end speed, but you never watch him get caught from behind at all. But one, my biggest thing with him is you don't see him make guys miss. He'd rather run through a tackle than run, you know, make guys miss and not take the hit. And so that'll be real interesting to see if that's something that Scotty Graham can change. But, you know, they were recruiting him pretty hard. They've got a few other guys that they really want to get. Washington wants to bring in at least two tailbacks in the 2025 recruiting class. And, you know, they've got a pretty loaded room right now, but that's going to thin out a little bit after the 2024 season. So, I really good pickup. I don't think this is a guy who's going to be a class changer as far as ratings are concerned or anything like that, but he's going to be a solid contributor once he gets to the University of Washington.
He's going to, what would you guess in 2 years his weight will be? Because what, yeah, is he 6'1", 6'2"?
You know, so 6'1", 6'2", and he's 190 pounds. I think 215, 220 is easy for him from the way you look at it, the way he runs and who his frame and everything like that. So he's going to try and get up here for spring ball, and then he's got his official visit set for the final week of visits in June, which is June 21st. So I'll hopefully get a chance to at least get an eye on him at spring ball, because I won't be there for the official visit, obviously. But that'll be interesting to see.
Anything else on recruiting to update, Scott?
Well, yeah. In the blog, I'm going to have a lot on some stuff, but there's going to be at least two official visitors in next weekend. One of them is Philip Bleedy, the defensive tackle transfer from Indiana, the University of Indiana. He's going to be up here for his official visit. There's another portal guy who's going to be in town for a visit that weekend too. And there's a good chance that two guys who signed with the University of Washington, but haven't had a chance to come up and meet with the new staff. They aren't enrolled early. They're guys who are going to show up in the summer. They're going to take official visits. I'll let those names out right now. That's Paul Menke and Omar Khan, both Texas guys. They haven't met the new staff yet, other than just seeing them out on the road and talking to them. And so both of those guys are looking at setting up an official visit for, I don't know if it'll be this weekend. One of the problems is Menke has track meets. He's a track guy. So every weekend he's basically got a track meet. So he's trying to figure out when he can come up. But he and Omar Khan said they want to come up together and visit with the new staff to see what things are like and meet with them and all those different things. So that's another thing to keep an eye on. Washington, as Chris has been documenting, thank you, Chris, for picking up the slack for me as I've been doing other things. But lots of offers going out to 2026 guys, 2025 guys. Jarrett Nielsen, a quarterback from Long Beach, Jordan, got an offer from the University of Washington. I just posted that this morning. And there's a lot of 2026 guys that are planning unofficial visits. Brandon Huffman just put up a four-star offensive lineman yesterday. He put up that he's going to be visiting the University of Washington. I think Zadrius Rainey-Saleh got a crystal ball from Steve Wiltfong, Tom Loy. I'm sorry, Tom Loy put one up for Zadrius, and that's the top player in the state of Washington for 2025. Was already committed to Washington, decommitted when I think he, what was he committed for, like 4 days,
something like that?
Yeah, because he committed on the day of the national championship game, and then he decommitted as soon as DeBoer left. But he's back, got a crystal ball from Tom Loy, and I think Washington's got a great shot at him. So lots of stuff going on. I'm going to have a huge blog for you guys on Monday, and just keep an eye out for that.
Spring ball again starts Tuesday or Wednesday, Scott.
Dude, don't even get me started.
Tuesday or Wednesday.
So. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be there, but it's going to require some juggling on me and my wife's part. So I really appreciate it when they do that to us. I know things happen. I get it. Things happen. It's just it's kind of frustrating on the other hand. So
yeah. So all right. We've been going a while. Let's go ahead and wrap this up, Chris Vetters.
Yeah, just an incredibly busy week. It's been a while since we've had back-to-back days on Wednesday and Thursday where we were on campus for as long as we were and having multiple events. So, you know, because like on Wednesday we had the football press conference followed by Danny Sprinkle's press conference. And then yesterday we had Pat Chun's press conference followed by the pro day. And it, I mean, it couldn't be more more packed in terms of information. And we're going to have a ton of information still coming out, you know, in the next days, next few days, in terms of things that we've learned and what have you about all that stuff going on. But Kim, you're right. Spring football right around the corner. Still have the defensive side of the ball that we're doing, the defensive position previews coming out. Look for a defensive line preview coming out really soon. And yeah, I'm praying for Tuesday, guys. That's for me. Not just for you, Scott, but I'm praying for me as well. I would like to see it start on schedule and get going, because I know a lot of people are really excited about seeing this group. The fact that it's open to the public, I think, is fantastic. So I think I would like them to stick to the schedule that they had so that people don't have to rearrange their schedules, as well as the 100 or so people that are going to be on the field and going to be running around that are going to be affected by that as well. So hopefully it gets started on Tuesday, but can't wait.
Scott Eklund, wrap it up.
Echo Chris, I'm praying for Tuesday as well. I mean, it's been a crazy, I mean, basically since the championship game was held on the 8th or 9th of January, it has been nonstop, balls to the wall, coaching changes, basketball season, women's basketball season, all the different stuff going on, all softball going on, all that different stuff. And on top of that, we have pro day. We have all these different things. It's just, it's nuts. And it's been fun. We're not complaining. A lot of people would love to do what we do, so we're not complaining too much. But it's been crazy. And looking forward to the start of some real football where we can talk about what's going on the field instead of what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, let's get back to covering stuff instead of all this off the field.
Oh my
and
gosh,
off the court
this
stuff.
Is nuts.
Jeez, yeah.
I mean, you guys have done this for about 8 years longer than I've done it. I've done it for 21 years. You guys are 29 years, whatever it is that you guys have been doing this. And it's just, I've never experienced this. You guys had it a little bit with Rick, how crazy that whole thing was, but you know, I mean, it's just been nuts.
I can't even imagine social media when Rick Neuheisel was around. Oh my God. But yeah, no, it's just been really, really busy. But that's what, you know, we like it busy. You know, it's just, you know, water through a fire hose. That's how we roll. So every time we think we're going to get a little bit of a break, you know, I just get my head on a swivel. So, you know, just it all works out in the end. So, again, we start on Tuesday. So 3 times a week we'll be doing that. We'll have practice coverage. We'll have interviews post practice as well as podcasts. So just lots and lots going on for the next month or so. And then hopefully we get a little bit of a break, and expecting May to be a busy recruiting month. So just keep it all tuned here at dogman.com. So for all of us at dogman.com, I'm Kim Grinnells along with Chris Fetters and Scott Eklund. Go Dogs.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.